Your first eight guys maybe should be blue plate specials, but those back five guys, they should be more like tin hats, more guys that are grunt players, garbage players that dive for the ball.
You are listening to the Scrambled Eggs Podcast on CrackSidewalks.com.
Hi, everyone. We're back. Little off-season check-in. Welcome in to Scrambled Eggs, your unofficial Marquette basketball podcast. You're on CrackSidewalks.com. No, it's been a minute, but we figured we were due. Phil, how you doing?
Good. Summer is here in Milwaukee, and expectations are high for Marquette basketball, and we got a Promax sighting. What's not to love?
Lots of stuff to talk about now. That's, you know, we again, Joe McCann, Phil Bush here with you to talk a little Marquette basketball, and we appreciate. We've actually gotten a few DMs, messages, say, hey, are you guys going to do a pod? It's been a while, and I would say, yeah, there hasn't been a whole lot of news, and like in that regard, like no news is good news, Phil. Like
right.
the off seasons when we have a lot of podcasts is usually when there's a lot of stuff going on. Most of it of the negative variety of players leaving or coaching changes or things that would give fans anxiety, and so far, you know, knock on wood, there hasn't been any of that yet.
Well, last summer was pretty quiet. I think we had one, maybe two pods. This summer so far has been, I wouldn't say quiet, but certainly, you know, nothing unexpected or surprising in a negative way. So that's good. So yeah, we really just gotta hope that continues.
Yeah, so but hey, it's good to be missed, right? It's good to like have people say,
I love being
hey,
loved,
you should
do a right?
Yeah, it's love to be loved. And yeah, we were actually at Marquette's campus about a month or so ago for the reunion weekend, which was a lot of fun. Got to see some old friends. Shout out to Tim Vetcher, who was like, hey, we should do a podcast like right now here at this party. And yeah, we considered it for a minute, but we would have had to do it on our phones. That would have involved a lot of editing. But
and
you know,
we already know
Tim
I'm not very good at that.
Yeah. So, but anyway, appreciate Tim Vetcher, big fan of the pod, checking in, and everyone else who sent us a message asking when we're going to do one, and the answer is right now. So we're going to kind of get you up to speed, especially maybe for those of you who maybe have not been actively following the off-season roster movement, maybe you need a little bit of update of who's gone where, what the team looks like, maybe talk schedule a little bit, expectations as we look ahead to the fall. But Phil, I'll just start with the news that is most prevalent in our minds, and that Marquette has had its first-round draft pick since 2016. And Olivier Maxence Prosper was drafted 24th overall in the NBA draft by the Sacramento Kings. He was traded to the Dallas Mavericks, which me, as a Metroplex resident, I am very fired up about. A remarkable rise for Omax. We haven't talked about it at all because, again, we haven't potted since the season ended. So it was quite a rise from, like, the day he declared, where I thought maybe the vibe around that was similar to Justin Lewis. Like, I get why you're declaring, but are you going to get drafted? Is this the right time? But you got to give Omax credit. He absolutely crushed it in his combine, his offseason workouts, whatever one-on-one interviews he had with NBA teams. And his stock went from, are you going to get drafted or not, to a green room invitee on draft night. So he was actually on the stage to shake hands with the commissioner on Thursday night. And what a scene, what an accomplishment for Omax. And I'm just really happy for him.
Yeah, I mean, count me amongst those, and maybe contrary to the optimistic Phil moniker these days, but count me among those that was just shocked by the meteoric, the epic rise. I can't use fancy words right now. The epic rise of Omax Prosper, who I from now on shall refer to as Promax. But like his rise was so significant, and he did so well in the run up to the draft. He pulled out of a lot of the draft combine type activities, right, to avoid injury and do private workouts.
Yeah, like the scrimmages at the end.
Right, which are, you know, that's, you know, so that was essentially him a month and a half ago saying, yeah, I'm comfortable and confident that I've got something here that's going to result in me being drafted.
Yeah,
right?
And I think even during the season, I think Marquette fans knew he had NBA tools. We just weren't sure he was there now.
Right.
Because, I mean, as great as he was, as far as like Big East postseason awards, he did not get any. I'm not necessarily saying that was a miss, but I mean, it was probably correct that Tyler Kolek was the player of the year. Oso was second team All Big East. Cam Jones was second team All Big East. Omax did not get any of those honors. And I remember Oso like saying like in an interview that I think the Marquette Wire posted, like, hey, this guy didn't get any awards, but he is so critical of what we do. And I think Marquette fans who watched the games knew that. So yeah, he's a very good player with NBA tools, just may need a little more developing, but maybe the development was there. And it's just, you know, there's just only one basketball on the court and only so many guys can score, and he just played his role beautifully. And then when he got to get in this combine situation where it's okay to play selfishly and just play for yourself and show everything you can do, that's when NBA teams saw that, like, okay, this guy can actually do a lot, and he could serve that role on an NBA team that he served at Marquette. And boy, he made his stock just rise meteorically, I think was the word you were looking for.
Right. Yes.
And
thank you.
He did a great job, and I'm happy for him, and I hope he fits in with the Mavericks. I do know there has been no D in the Alice Mavericks lately. They could score points, but they can't play any defense. And I think they did that very well, addressed that pretty well by drafting Derek Lively, a kid I know from Sports Stars Tomorrow, and by adding Omax, who can probably guard three or four positions at the pro level. So I think he will have a role with Dallas. And I'm excited to see where he goes. So good for Omax. Congrats to Omax. And remarkable for the program, right? It's something that Shaka can, like, it's the first, like, real feather in his cap as far as player development, getting a guy to the league. I know Justin got to the league last year, but most of his development was under Wojo. And then he had a good year with Marquette, but he didn't get drafted. But this is a guy who came in, committed to Shaka's system for 2 years, developed quite a bit in those 2 years. And now he's a first-round pick. And I think that's something Shaka is probably showing to the 2024 and 2025 guys.
Yeah, seeing Omax develop and grow, you know, within the draft process, even on the roster this past season has been pretty remarkable. And his ability to develop and get to the league is super critical, right? Because Shaka can use that as a recruiting tool, if nothing else. And, you know, let's be honest, you know, the number of MU guys are dwindling in the NBA, right? You know, we're down to Jimmy and Jamal and, you know, and Jay Crowder and that sort of thing. So getting another guy into the NBA will bode well for Marquette recruitment, I think.
Yeah, the number of MU guys in the league is dwindling a little bit. Yeah, we got Jimmy's the star, and, you know, Jay has had a nice long career. Wes Matthews, Juan Anderson's in the league. Jamal Cain is on a roster. Justin Lewis is on a roster. But we need a few more guys in the league, and it's good to see Omax added to the list.
Yeah, you know, Omax's ability to guard multiple positions, play defense. That's what got him into the league for the most part, and that's what's going to make him successful in Dallas initially. You know, and that'll give him time, I hope, for his offensive game to develop if he can, you know, be more consistent from three and have a better handle and all that. You know, that's what he's going to have the opportunity to do there in Dallas, and, you know, we need him to be successful so that he can continue the string of, you know, Marquette advertising from the NBA guys. I mean, I don't know that I'd want to play with Kyrie, but, you know, hey.
I know Bucks fans are cringing at the idea of him playing for Jason Kidd, but not to dive too much into the NBA on this podcast, but I will say that the key for really any player is getting to that second contract, right? It's like he's essentially got like a 2-3-4 year trial here where teams are going to, like the Mavericks are going to evaluate, do we want this guy for the future or not? And when you get that second contract, that's when you get the big money, and then you could really start to snowball that into a long career like Jay Crowder has. Like, Jay Crowder has never been a star on any team he's played on, but he keeps finding roster spots, and he's made more money than he'll be able to spend in his life, hopefully. And get to that second contract and prove you're worth the roster spot. So that's what Omax's next challenge is. Yes, he's on the team, but now he's got to carve out that role like he did at Marquette and play his role very well. And so when it comes contract time, the Mavs or some other team will say, that's a guy we need. He's proven himself.
I mean, we're excited that Pro Max is a thing now, and he got to the league. But, you know, and not to be disrespectful to him, but, you know, on a scale of 1 to 10, how surprised are you that, you know, he ended up a first round pick?
That he's first round, I would say like a 7. He was good. I mean, he was good, but there are only 30 spots in the first round, man. I mean, we have seen some very, very good players not get drafted. I think this time a year ago, we were pretty sure Justin Lewis was getting drafted, maybe in the first round. He didn't get picked at all, and he wasn't hurt or anything at that time. If you had told me, like, during the NCAA tournament, Omax is going pro with the eyes of getting drafted, I'd say, I could see that. I wouldn't have said he's a first-rounder. But I could have seen him getting drafted. But yeah, the fact that he rose to first round lock to the point that the NBA invited him to the green room, that was surprising. So I'd say I'm 7 or 8, and I don't say that out of disrespect. I say that in amazement and impressed by the work he has put in to show what he can do over the last couple months.
Yeah, I think I've got him a solid 7 or 8, you know, type out of 10 for kind of the surprise on draft night, because, you know, again, I thought he was a very solid contributor on the team, but, you know, and you could see potential in the defense, right? Especially the multi-positional defensive nature that, you know, the NBA is starting to crave. So I guess it makes sense that we got there. You know, but especially when you look at the folks that didn't make it, right? Like Adama Sanogo, you know, was, you know, a preseason Big East player of the year potential and ended up going undrafted. And yeah, the big men are harder to get drafted in today's NBA. So, you know, are less likely to be drafted, but, you know, for Omax to kind of vault all the way, you know, to the green room and jump over some of the folks that were his contemporaries that were, you know, preseason all whatever picks. That's really impressive and a little bit surprising. So it's great.
I agree. So congrats and good luck to Olivier Maxence Prosper, Olivier Maxence Prosper, as Adam Silver, like, showing off his French on draft night. We just call him Omax. It's just the simplest way to do it. But, you know, Omax now, I guess is it Omav now, or Promav?
It's Promax to me, but we can work on it.
We'll workshop it. We'll workshop it. But let's talk about the current team now. So, yes, if from the Marquette perspective, yes, the I don't know if I'd call it bad news, but I guess the negative from a roster standpoint is you do lose Omax for the 2023-2024 season. But the good news is you didn't lose anybody else, anybody rotation players from last year. Every other rotation player is back. So Marquette is still a preseason top 10 team. Now, some guys at the bottom of the roster who barely played last year, they did transfer. So Marion Ellis, he did transfer. Zach Reitzel, he did transfer. And Kian Etigere also transferred out. But none of those guys played significant minutes last year. So every other player other than Omax who played notable minutes returns. Now coming in, freshman, you got Trey Norman, who is a 6'4 guard from Massachusetts. You've got Zaid Lowry, who is a 6'5 guard forward wing player. He is from Springfield. He played his prep ball at La Lumiere, which is a prep school in Indiana. And Al Amadou, who is a, I guess you'd call him a big. He's a forward. He's a 6'9", 200-pound forward. He is from Philadelphia. So those are the three scholarship additions. So, 4 scholarship guys out, and then 2, and then 3 coming in, if I did the math correctly. And so there's still 1 scholarship available for next year, technically. At this point in the transfer portal, I'm not sure that scholarship is going to be filled, because based on who's out there, I don't know if there's an impact guy. I don't know how many guys who are still in the portal are looking to be just a depth addition. Say, sure, I'll come sit on the bench for you behind all the guys you got now. But the good news is the roster is mostly intact. You know, yes, losing Omax hurts from a Marquette perspective because you'd love to have him back. But players lose, or teams lose good players to the pros all the time or to the transfer portal. Marquette did not lose any rotation players to the portal, so there is plenty of reason for optimism that Marquette has the ability to absorb the loss of Omax. The question, Phil, for you is, how is that loss absorbed by the current roster?
I mean, before we kind of get to the absorbed by the roster piece, I mean, I think, you know, no disrespect to Omax, but you know, I think we can absorb his loss with the pieces we have left. I think the ceiling is still, you know, the ceiling, right? It's still high expectations. I just think it's the floor that perhaps is a little riskier. There's more variance there, right? We have less tolerance for injury or players not fully developing and that sort of thing that will kind of impact how this next season goes. So I think not having Omax on the roster causes some lower fault tolerance. But I do think the pieces are there on the roster to kind of absorb, right? We're going to have to see somebody like a Ben Gold step up and get more minutes. We're going to have to see, you know, David Joplin develop and be a better, a more consistent player. You know, Chase Ross is, you know, had a great freshman year, but, you know, it was still a freshman year. So that's going to have to develop. And, you know, it's really going to come down to, you know, going Al McGuire, you know, his whole, you know, the best thing about freshmen is they become sophomores. What does that leap look like for the freshmen who now become sophomores? Can they absorb the minutes and do some of the things that, you know, that Omax did, you know, for the team, but do it as, you know, kind of not all as one individual, but as the individual pieces and figure that all out?
Yeah, something you said about this time a year ago, when we were asking the same question about absorbing the loss of Justin Lewis. You said at the time, you don't need one player to do it. You just kind of need everyone else to step up their game. You restructure the roster. You restructure the minutes, the rotation, catering to the players you have. And if everyone contributes a little more, you've improved as a team. And they did that by leaps and bounds a year ago. I mean, some guys just took such significant leaps that you went from you know, a team that was an 8-9 seed a year ago to a team that won the Big East regular season and conference tournament title and got a 2 seed in the NCAA tournament. So huge leap between that season and this past season. Now, but yeah, I think Ben Gold is going to be one of those guys who will get more minutes, and I think he showed late last year he's ready for that. David Joplin will certainly get more minutes. Chase Ross certainly proved he is ready for more minutes throughout last year. I think you could even see him, Chase Ross, starting in a smaller lineup. You know, you'd be playing four guards essentially if you do that, but I think you can play that way in college basketball, particularly the Big East. David Joplin could be in line to start too, if you want to go a little bigger in your starting lineup, but all those minutes are going to be worked out in practice, and I think Shaka has certainly, and his staff has built up enough goodwill with us over the last 2 years that we kind of trust that they are going to maximize this roster and the rotation and, like, whoever is earning those minutes in practice, even if it is one of the freshmen. If one of the freshmen proves to be one of the best players, he's going to start or play significantly. For those of you who follow or care about recruiting rankings, Trey Norman is probably the highest regarded freshman coming in. None of them are like five stars, but I think Trey Norman was like a very high four star. He's probably the highest regarded, but Zaid is not far behind him in that regard. Al, I think, was maybe a top 100-ish recruit. But all these guys, I think, will be ready to contribute. I don't know if I predict anybody's going to have to redshirt, but that's always a possibility if you've got 10 guys who are ready to contribute. But back to my point, yeah, I think everyone just needs to contribute a little more, and I think they're all ready to, right? I think everyone, all the young guys last year, when they got their opportunities, really showed something. You know, like whether it was Sean Jones, Ben Gold, or Chase Ross, when they got their opportunities, they gave us reasons to say, man, I'm glad he's here. And I think they will get more opportunities like that this year.
Yeah, I think the big thing is, you know, do we see development out of out of last year's freshman, similar to what we saw the previous year's freshman, right? Oso Ighodaro developed significantly. Obviously, Omax Prosper developed significantly. Tyler Kolick made a huge leap from his first year at Marquette to his second. You know, so will we see Chase Ross, Sean Jones, you know, even to a certain extent, David Joplin, will we see them develop even further? Will we see that, you know, that big leap that we saw with this past year's team that made that, you know, that kind of caught everybody by surprise? Will we see that leap? And I think the thing to me with the incoming freshmen is, you know, the roster redundancy or the roster strength is such that we don't need them to be anything more than freshmen, right? We don't Amadou doesn't have to come in and make, you know, be a 20-minute a game contributor. Trey Norman doesn't have to come in and be, you know, a 25-minute a game, you know, shooting guard or what have you, right? We have the ability to let those players develop if they can, you know, similar to Chase Ross, right? Chase Ross got some minutes early, and then as his production came through, his minutes increased. We have the ability to let those freshmen grow and get some minutes, get into the game, and if they're able to produce and give the team minutes that are productive, that's great. So, you know, ultimately at the end of the day, the incoming freshmen, I think there's great talent. I think they will be future stalwarts at Marquette, but they're almost kind of a bonus to this roster, and whatever we get out of them,
right,
that's great.
Yeah, I think that's perfectly said. It's almost like a bonus if the freshmen are good. If the freshmen truly play like freshmen and they're just not ready for it, it's okay, because I think the roster of returning guys will be just fine. But I agree with you. I think you can expect a little more out of these freshmen. And you know, Shock and the staff don't expect these guys to just sit on the bench and clap their freshman year. They expect them to play, and they expect them to contribute, no matter how small a role that will be. Again, you know, they're only Omax's departure does open up some minutes, but there aren't a ton of minutes available when you look at the other guys who are returning, with, you know, Tyler and Oso and Cam Jones and Stevie Mitchell. I don't expect a step back in their minutes after the way they all played last year. And yeah, I mean, some guys took such a monumental leap, like you can't expect that much. Like, you can't expect Tyler to improve as much from last year to this year as he did from 2 years ago to this past year, right? Because if he improves that much, he's going to be the National Player of the Year on a first-round pick. Because the leap he took was incredible. It was basically most around his shooting, and then the confidence that permeated from that kind of spread to everything else. I think Oso's leap was a benefit of him getting stronger, but also just getting playing time, because when he was more of a part-time player 2 years ago, when he was sharing minutes with Kerr in the middle. So more playing time led to also a huge leap for Oso. And then I think you just saw steady improvement from a lot of the other guys. Cam got a little better. Stevie got a little better. David Joplin got a little better. And I think some of that also just comes from the belief Shock and the staff showed in them when they decided to abandon their pursuit of some guys in the portal a year ago, right? Like, there were guys they were considering. It wasn't necessarily like they were close to getting a commitment from anybody. They looked at it as like, how much work do we have to do to get a commitment from this guy? And is it worth it when we could just focus more time on Oso and Cam and David? And they went the latter, and it worked. And it's seemingly so far, I think it's going the same way this year. Yeah, there were guys in the portal. I'm sure there were some guys that Marquette reached out to, talked to, discussed roles with, The news on that regard has been very quiet, right? Like, there has been, like, no leaks or reports of saying, oh, yeah, this guy's visiting Marquette today, this guy's touring the campus today, Shock is smart, is in contact with this guy. There's been almost nothing. That doesn't mean they haven't been talking to recruits, but I guess just nothing was ever imminent. And that's probably fine when you have this many guys coming back that you believe in.
Right. And I think that's the continuation of, you know, the whole, hey, Shaka's not going to, you know, worry about bringing in new portal players when he can focus on the players that are already here, right? So I don't think it was like an absolute prohibition on portal players, but I think it was a, hey, if the right player with the right attitude, with the right, you know, with the right need or positional or skill capabilities comes up, great, we'll go there. But we're not going to go chasing it because, you know, not to go all Norman Dale, but my team is on the floor, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, and, like, don't misunderstand. Like, Shaka is not necessarily anti-portal. I mean, two of his best players last year, he got in the portal, Tyler Kolek and Omax. And those were two of his best players the past couple years. So if there's a great fit in the portal, heck yeah, he would go get him, especially if there's a need. Like, if Oso had entered the draft, you would think certainly this team would add a big guy of some sort. But he didn't. Oso's back, so there wasn't necessarily a glaring need up front, not to say that they would turn a guy down if there was a guy who was willing to play a certain role in the front court. But there, I guess there was just never a fit. There was never anybody with any mutual interest. And at this point, I don't know if there will be. There's always those guys who enter late, like guys who graduate in June or something. And so when they graduate in June, they can be eligible right away. Or there's the situation at West Virginia with Huggins having to step down. And when the coach leaves, everybody gets 30 days to reevaluate and enter the portal and get that one-time transfer. So I don't know. I haven't even thought about West Virginia's roster, if there's anybody Marquette would want there. Things like that happen.
Say hello to Jose Perez.
Yeah, Jose Perez, come on back. I feel bad for him, honestly. He's transferred a couple times now. But again, there could be another coaching move. Like if West Virginia takes a coach from another school, then all those players might want to enter. So there could be some dominoes still to fall this summer that maybe there's a guy in the portal that Marquette would want. But again, most of the roles are kind of set. Unless you are looking maybe for a little more rebounding or a little, I don't know, maybe you want some more length in the front court to help what kind of replace what Omax had. But I think we kind of said it, Phil. I think there are guys on this roster who are ready to step into those roles. The team will not be exactly the same as it was a year ago, but it'll be pretty dang close.
Yeah, agreed. And the other thing is, you know, the other thing that gets overlooked that I think Shaka is probably considering is, you need to maintain roster flexibility for future teams, right? Like if you go unload, portal up, you know, and to fill every spot when you've got a really compelling team now, do you stunt the development, right? If you let me put it another way, you bring someone into the portal, you're taking minutes that can develop players you're going to need 2 years from now, right? You need 5, 10, 15 minutes a game for the incoming freshmen to get minutes. You need time for Ben Gold and David Joplin and Sean Jones to further develop, because they're going to be the players you're counting on 2 years from now. And if you load up all this year, you know, with portal and you stunt those players' development, you're kind of costing yourself in the outlying years.
Yeah, and maybe so, I don't disagree with that, but a slight counterpoint is how many times do we think Marquette's going to have a legitimate shot at a national championship? So if you think you can add a guy to this team that's going to get you there, I think you do that. And even if it means one of these young guys do have to sit a little more this year, I think that's worth it. If you, again, I'm not saying there's a guy in there that I think fits that description. But if there's a guy in there that Shaka and the staff say, all right, look, if we add him, I really think we can win the whole dang thing this year. Then I think I'd go for it.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Like, if there's an absolute blockbuster fit, he would have done it. Which is why I'm saying I don't think it was an absolute we will not do it. But the right fit and the right circumstances didn't come along. And so he's comfortable saying, you know, this is the roster. And quite frankly, you know, with some of his press conferences and conversations and what he's kind of done in the public eye, I think he's, you know, not only entirely comfortable with the expectations of this team and this roster, it feels like maybe him specifically, but maybe the whole team in general is kind of thirsty for those expectations, right? Yeah. Last season, they were hunters, right? They weren't expected. This season they're going to be the hunted, which is kind of where we closed up the last pod. But they are, I have to say, so far, I feel like the hunted feel like they're ready for it.
Oh, I agree with that. And that's kind of where I want to go next, as we kind of maybe shift gears from the roster and talk about this upcoming season and the schedule. You know, Shaka had a little off-season press conference, just a little chat about where things were. And, you know, I think he kind of, like, scoffed at some of the questions about expectations because, like, you know, he was saying, and I get this is the mindset of most teams, is like, we always have high expectations. We always want to win. But I think it's something you would probably never hear a coach say, but they know when, like, people around the program don't think much of it, right? Or just maybe just don't expect much. Say, oh, I mean, you guys are building. It's okay. You know, you know, do your best, right? Like, they knew they were picked to finish ninth last year. Tyler Kolek had the infamous FM quote at Big East Media Day. Yeah. But, like, I think he kind of said, look, more or less said, our expectations this year are the same as they were last year. We expect to win the Big East Championship. And that's what they expect. That's what they expected a year ago. No one else did. No one outside of the Al McGuire Center thought that. But for them, it's the same mindset. But I think for us as fans, and you kind of touched on this earlier, that whole ceiling floor thing. Yeah, I think that is 100% true, where I don't think anybody in their right mind would pick this team to finish any lower than third in the Big East this year, and I think a lot of people would pick them to win it. I think, you know, Creighton and UConn are probably going to be right up there. Probably UConn, certainly, but I think Marquette will probably be the preseason favorite. I think that would make a lot of sense. If not, UConn coming off a national title, and they're bringing some guys back, and they did well in the portal. But the idea that this team could finish, or the idea that this team could not make the tournament, is probably completely off the table, barring injuries. Like, this team is making the tournament as long as they stay healthy. But yeah, then the ceiling is, whoo boy. I mean, the ceiling, as Michael Jordan would say, the ceiling is the roof. They could win the national title, and that's something they could realistically talk about within those walls, which is something that almost sounds ludicrous to say for a program that only has won and has only been to three Final Fours in its history. But if you're a preseason top five team, why is that not something you can talk about?
Well, and quite frankly, like, if you're hiding from it or not talking about it, I'd be concerned because again, you don't have that, you know, eye of the tiger, so to speak, right? You're not embracing expectations. Like, it drives me nuts when coaches, like, slow play stuff, like, oh, I don't know, man. I don't look at preseason expectations. We're gonna be what we're gonna be, and it's like, man, you know, you read this stuff, like just accept it.
Yeah, and you know, fans, like, some fans are like, no, come on, don't jinx it, don't say things like that. But I'm not saying that if they don't win the national title, it's a bust of a season. I'm just saying that why can't Tyler Kolek and Oso Iguodaro say we want to win the national championship this year and not be laughed at? Like, they can absolutely say that within those walls, and they can say it in press conferences now at Big East Media Day. They can say, yes, we want to win the Big East, and then we want to go further in the tournament than we did last year, and that means getting to a Final Four. And if you get to a Final Four, you better be thinking about winning two more games and winning the whole dang thing. So, yeah, expectations, maybe hope is maybe the different word I want to use instead of expectation. Hope is very high for this team, and there are plenty of reasons to be hopeful and optimistic about this team after what they showed last year. When you bring back this many minutes from a team that was a double champion in its league, you are allowed to be optimistic and not sound arrogant, right?
Right. Right. Yeah, and I mean, you know, quite frankly, I think a little arrogance is probably reasonable. Now, you can always, I get why fans are like, oh, don't jinx it, don't do whatever, because they're afraid of getting it thrown back in the face. But, you know, it's fun being a little arrogant about this, right? And again, not in a like, haha, we're the best, you guys all suck, like, screw you guys kind of way, but kind of in a, like, yeah, we, you know, I would say maybe more cocky than arrogant. Just in a, yeah, we're going to be good and we're going to enjoy it. And that's how this is. And then, you know, if something happens and we, you know, end up lower than expectations, like, so be it. I'll deal with that then. That's future Phil's problem.
I'm going deep into the archives for this reference, but way back in the day when I was a high school athlete, I swam in high school. So this was my freshman year in high school. So again, I was not one of the best swimmers on the roster. In fact, I was actually one of the slowest. But the team I was joining that year had several guys who had been to state the year before and were favored to win their individual events at state that year. So the goal for that team I was on was to win the state championship. And anyone who followed swimming in that state, I was in Nebraska at the time, knew that our team was the best team in the state. And so we were writing down our team goals for that year. And one of the goals was, yes, win the state championship. Second goal was going, this is where the memory triggered, was confidence with class. That was what we wrote on our board that year, was confidence with class. Like, to be confident that we are the best team in every meet we're in, but not to be assholes about it.
Yep.
Spot on. That's just kind of what triggered that memory. That was what we wrote on our board that year. It was number one, win state, number two, go undefeated, and number three, confidence with class. And so that's the way we approached it. So I think that is kind of a thing that I think we're talking about with this Marquette team, and also with just the fans in general. Just confidence with class. Yes, we are damn good. We are really good. I'm not saying we're going to win every game. I'm not saying we're going to go undefeated. I'm not saying Marquette is going to win the national title. I'm saying they can. I'm saying it's a possibility, and it's saying that's something they can put on their goal board for the year and not sound dumb about it.
Right. And it's something that they should strive for. Right? Like, there should be no holding back, and I have a sneaking suspicion it's going to be some of the development, motivational tactics from a coach like Shaka to be like, hey, David Joplin, you didn't have a, I'm just picking on him as an example, but you didn't hit summer practice super hard today. Like, that's not going to do it for a national championship team, right? Like, You gotta pick up this is the goal. This is what we need you to do to meet that goal. So, that's where I'm really encouraged. And I think the schedule reflects as well. The team has internal expectations. They're embracing the public expectations. And the schedule, kind of reflects that, hey, we're going to be a damn good team and we're going to have to test ourselves, because March is the ultimate test, and if we're going to do something significant there, we better be ready for it.
Yeah, and that's kind of where I wanted to go next, Phil. Good transition there. So I want to talk about the schedule. We know now the entire, non-conference schedule for Marquette. For those of you who are not aware, here it is. I'm not going to list dates because I don't want this to get too long, but these are the orders of the game. Northern Illinois at home, Rider at home, Gavitt Games at Illinois. So we're going to play the Illini once again. We're going to have the Maui Invitational. I'm going to come back to that in just a minute, but that's a great tournament this year. Southern at home, at UW-Madison. The Texas Longhorns come to Milwaukee in the Big East Big 12 battle.
There's a narrative game if I've ever seen one.
I was a little disappointed that Ron Holland, one of the top players in the country, top high school player, decommitted from Texas, and he's going to play in the G League. He would have been fun to match up against. Texas will still be good, though. They did well, pretty well in the portal, but maybe not as good as they were this past year. So Texas coming to Milwaukee. Notre Dame also coming to Milwaukee, another chapter of that rivalry, and then they will wrap up non-conference play with St. Thomas in Milwaukee on December 14th, and Big East play begins after that. So a loaded schedule. Now, going back to that Maui Invitational, here are the teams in the Maui Invitational, if you are not aware. So this, again, going back to the schedule, this is after the Illinois game. So the first game of the Maui Invitational will be the fourth game of the season. So this will be Marquette's fourth, fifth, and sixth games of the season. The bracket is not set yet, but Marquette will play three of the following: Gonzaga, Kansas, Purdue, Syracuse, UCLA, Tennessee, and the host school Chaminade. Holy smokes, that is
loaded. Murderer's Row.
Yeah, so Kansas, maybe one of the Kansas and Purdue both preseason top three probably, because Kansas they got Hunter Dickinson in the portal. They did lose a couple guys. They lost some depth, but Kansas I think looks pretty good. Purdue of course is getting Zach Edey back. Gonzaga lost a lot, but they also picked up, I forgot the list of names they've got in the portal, but they did add a few guys. So the cupboard is not bare out there in Spokane. Syracuse, this new era for them, post-Jim Boeheim. I'm not sure what they're going to look like, but it is a name. UCLA will be very good. I assume the Pac-12 favorite once again. Tennessee, they should be a contender in the SEC. I don't know if they'll be as good as they were a year ago, but they will be quite a challenge. And then, of course, Chaminade. Respectfully, they are the host school, but they're the team you don't want to face just because they do nothing for your strength of schedule.
Right.
But, Phil, I mean, what a field for Maui. I know it's a tough ticket to get. I would love to be able to go out there myself, but I think that is going to be a very difficult ticket. But what I am just – I mean, when you look – again, even if Marquette does get stuck playing Chaminade, if you play three of those seven teams and you add that to a schedule that includes at Illinois, at Wisconsin, Texas at home, Notre Dame at home, that is a big boy schedule. That is a schedule, like you said, Phil, that a team that believes it will be good and in contention for a number one seed schedules. This might be the best, most challenging schedule I've seen Marquette ever have. Now, I'd have to check the archives on that and fact check that. There may have been a tougher one maybe during the Buzz years or something, but that I forgot. But that's as good as I've ever seen from Marquette.
Yeah, I agree, and it's smartly constructed to boot, right? It's the little things like having, you know, Southern, which, you know, hey, we don't want to be rude, but, you know, Southern's a quality, bye game opponent, so that's good, but it's also an opponent you should beat, and so we, you know, coming back from Maui, we yep. have almost a full week off. And then we're playing a bye game opponent that we should win. So it's like, hey, let's get that Maui hangover out of the way. Let's not trip ourselves up. So it builds an extremely strong schedule while simultaneously being smart about it. It is, you know, whether it's the best schedule in terms of quality, I don't know. But I think it's the most impactful schedule we've seen in a while, right? Like there isn't, yeah. there's none of this. Oh, these fluff teams don't matter. You know, they're interesting, compelling games. There's narrative games. There's challenging games. I was just looking at, just to kind of give an idea, I was looking at ESPN for what it's worth. They did their, way too early top 25. They just released it three days ago. So they got Kansas at one. They got Purdue at three. They've got, UConn at five. Tennessee at six. Gonzaga at 8, Marquette at 10. Was Arizona in the Maui field?
No, they're not.
No.
UCLA is the Pac-12 team out there.
Yeah, UCLA. All right, I don't see UCLA in here, but then they also have, believe it or not, where did I see it? They have Texas at 24, and they have Wisconsin at 25 in this way too early. I absolutely do not buy the Wisconsin at 25, but whatever.
No, that's fair. I mean, it's an incredible schedule. By the way, that Maui hangover thing, that is a real thing. I've heard John Calipari saying he doesn't like going to Maui because the body clock thing when you come back to the mainland is rough. So, right. Having a bye opponent. While you were reading that off, I was just to get another perspective on it. Gary Parrish over at CBS Sports also does what he calls his top 25 in one. So, looking at his, Kansas 1, Purdue 2. He's got Marquette 6. UConn 8, Creighton 9, scrolling, Tennessee 14. So they actually are probably going to be better than I thought. So they are a contender to win the SEC again. Scrolling, Gonzaga 19, Texas 20, Illinois 23, Villanova 24. Yeah. It's a lot of teams Marquette's playing this year, man, or could play. So, yeah, I'm not sure how the bracket is going to shake out. I'm going to assume that Chaminade is going to get one of the big dogs in their first game because that's what they like to do is have Chaminade play like a giant in their first game, have a chance to maybe have that Ralph Sampson Virginia type upset that they had a long time ago. So they've played Kansas a lot historically, so maybe they get Kansas. If not, I think they would get Zach Edey and Purdue. So if Marquette wins its first game, it would avoid Chaminade. Who that would be, I have no idea. But if you're getting three of Gonzaga, Kansas, Purdue, Syracuse, UCLA, Tennessee. Whew. And the thing is, if Marquette wins Maui, they will be the number one team in the country on Thanksgiving Day.
Oh, easily. Easily.
Well, I guess the week after Thanksgiving. I think that's the week leading up to Thanksgiving. But so the first poll after Thanksgiving, Marquette would be the number one team in the country if they win Maui.
Yeah, that would. Yeah, that poll out November 27th would be. Yeah, assuming Marquette doesn't trip up anywhere against, you know, Northern Illinois or Rider, but you know they could probably. Illinois.
The. Yeah, yeah. That's a road game, but yes, if they're undefeated after Maui, they will be the number one team in the country without question.
Yeah. Yeah, and deservedly so.
But a long way to go between here and there. But it just echoes the overall point. This is a schedule that proves you're one of the big dogs early, right? If you get through, there are only four games, five if you get Chaminade, where it's a layup win. Every other game, it's a notable opponent. It's some road games in there. They're not just hiding in Milwaukee all during the non-con. They're going to Champaign. They're going to Madison. And they're bringing two power conference opponents to the Fiserv in Texas and Notre Dame. So, great schedule. And then you go to Maui to play maybe the best field that prestigious tournament has ever had. I mean, that again, in the history of the Maui, there's been some great teams going out there, some loaded fields. But when you've got three top 10 teams, maybe four or five top 20 teams, gosh, that is awesome. That is going to be must-watch television.
Oh, championship or feast week is going to be just flat-out amazing. The thing I'd be curious about, and I don't have any way to figure this out or know, and maybe somebody does. How often does a national champion come out of the Maui Invitational? Now, I'm not saying win the Maui and then win the national championship, but how often does an eventual national champion compete in the Maui?
That would be a task for somebody with more time than me.
Correct.
So,
but it's worth considering, right?
I would imagine it has happened, but yes, that I bet it's happened a time or two. So,
right. So it'll be a very interesting and compelling tournament. The non-conference, like. If there is someone out there complaining, we need to, you know, like, I don't know, make them leave the fan base or something. Yeah. Because between the roster and the schedule and all this other stuff, there is zero to complain about. Like, zero.
Yeah. So, plenty of reasons to be excited about this upcoming season. And, I think, was there anything else we wanted to touch on in the offseason? I think we've kind of touched on a lot. Again, it's been relatively quiet off season, but really mostly good news with Omax getting drafted. No other really notable roster changes. No transfers coming in, at least not yet. And maybe one of the best schedules Marquette has ever had. As you were talking, I just pulled up the Maui Invitational and their list of champions, or the list of champions at the tournament. Again, this would be boring radio for me to, or boring podcasting for me to go through the whole thing. But off a quick look, there definitely have been some national champions that went on, or some Maui champions that went on to win the national title, or some very good teams. The one that jumps out right away, Duke 92, they won it. The COVID year, Kansas and Dayton, that ended up not having a tournament, but Kansas and Dayton were both one seeds when we got to March that year. So, yeah, a lot of really good teams come out of the Maui Invitational.
Yeah, well, and they should, right? Like that's kind of the whole point. It is the premier invitational basketball invitational. It's kind of the original too.
Yeah, it's really the thing that kind of made Feast Week a thing, and like everyone else, like they got the one in the Bahamas now, the Battle for Atlantis, and they got these tournaments all over the country, kind of to add to the excitement of that. But yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Anything else you want to touch on before we wrap it up, Phil? I think we kind of touched on a lot. No. I think it's good to catch everybody up to speed.
No, I think we covered everything, especially that we know now. And you know, I hope everyone takes this the right way, but I hope we don't have to talk for a little bit here. But,
yeah. The running joke is anytime we have a podcast that like triggers something that we need to talk about. But if it does trigger something, hopefully it's more good news.
Yeah, well, and I will say this. I feel like that's maybe a superstition we can abandon in the Wojo era.
Yeah, it's true. I guess it maybe hasn't happened too much lately, but yeah, that did seem to happen a lot. Like we'd pod in the off season and somebody would transfer or you know, we'd pod and Marquette would get a commit the next day, or so it wasn't always bad news, but there was always something that would happen within like 24 to 48 hours that made the podcast date, and you're like, well, got to go back in the lab.
Yeah, so the shelf life on the pods was a little rough there for a bit, but hopefully this one will last and everyone will kind of enjoy the meanderingness of the off season like we have, and you know, and before we know it, it's going to be October, September, and we're going to be kind of serious about this stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Was that Boomer I heard barking in the background?
Yes, there is Boomer in the background going, you're not listening to the bells that tell you I want to go outside. Now pay attention to me.
Well, all right. Well, let's wrap this up and let Boomer outside because he's a very good dog. As always, folks, we appreciate you listening to the podcast. We welcome your feedback. If you want to hit us up, chat about anything, if you want to give us ideas for the next pod, whenever that may be. But I'm on Twitter. I'm Joe McCann 3. Phil is MOOOF23 at Crack Sidewalks. The team handle. You can go to cracksidewalks.com. We post the podcast there. And also remember to rate, review, and subscribe Apple Podcasts and Spotify. And we do have that Scrambled Eggs Facebook page still as well. Phil, please let Boomer out. Tell him he's a good boy. And enjoy the rest of your offseason until we meet again.
Yeah, it'll be great. I will go let the goodest boy out. And I hope everyone enjoys their summer. And we'll all chat soon.
All right, everybody, enjoy the rest of your summer. We'll check in when we need to check in. Until then, seashells and balloons.